I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal wherever you get your podcast.
And watch on Bloomberg Originals, Bloomberg Television, or BTV Plus.
This is Bloomberg Business Week with Carol Masser and Bloomberg Quick Takes' Tim Stenovic on Bloomberg Radio.
I want to get right to our guest. He's really interesting. And you might remember a story by Bloomberg's Missy Igafapoulou that began with, in Silicon Valley, Nir Eyal is the habits guy. Want to understand how to get app users to come back in again? Then Eyal is your man. That's what she wrote in his story. He is a former lecturer at Stanford's Graduate School of Business, an angel investor. He has studied how companies such as Facebook, now of course Meta, and Twitter encourage users to spend time on their platforms. He's also author of a book. It was out in 2014, Hooked, How to Build Habit-Forming Products. His website is nearandfar.com, and he joins us in our Bloomberg Interactive Brokers studio. Welcome.
Thanks. Great to be here.
Great background. I feel like I have a million questions. So you're just going to have to stay for the next 60 minutes. We're just going to like cancel the next show. Tell us a little bit about, like, we were talking about the Oura Ring, which you have on. All of this information and all of this information gadgets or gathering gadgets that we're wearing, is it a good thing for us? And Mike talked about, you know, he's on his phone all the time. Is this good for society?
It's a great question. Is it good? Is it bad? The answer is yes. It's both.
It is.
Paul Virilio has a wonderful quote. He said, when we invented the ship, we invented the shipwreck.
That's
so
interesting.
Of course, every new technology, especially one on such a massive scale as the internet, is going to have goods and bads about how we manage those.
You know, Nir, I'm wondering about sort of the chemicals that are at play, like the brain chemicals. You know, you always hear about, well, if you get a 10 notifications on your on, is that a real thing? You know, is there dopamine or whatever, you know, happiness chemicals at work when you when you get addicted to an app and you're you know, love to see those notifications and stuff like that?
Yes and no. I hate to give a wishy-washy answer, but typically if you hear somebody talk about dopamine squirts, just discount everything they say after.
Really?
Yeah. Because it's so overused, it's so overplayed. Everything releases dopamine. When you hug somebody, you get dopamine. When you learn to play the piano or play tennis, you get a squirt of dopamine. Dopamine is not cocaine in the brain. It's on a different scale than using an app. So the whole idea of getting addicted to an app or hijacking your brain is so overplayed. If you actually look at the research and you talk to the people who study this stuff, some people get addicted, of course, just like some people get addicted to alcohol, right? Alcohol is highly addictive, but not everybody who has a glass of wine with dinner is an alcoholic, right? About 3 to 5% of the population is addicted, but it's certainly not everyone. Addiction is a pathology, and just because some people get addicted doesn't mean everyone will.
So these little dopamine hits that we get it's something pretty natural that we'd probably be getting from
Absolutely.
If we see a puppy or something.
Anyway. And we want products to get better. Products being engaging is not a problem. It's progress. Yeah. Right? Are we going to say, hey, Apple, your phones are really easy to use. Stop that. Netflix, your shows, I want to watch them all the time. Can you please make boring shows? It's ridiculous. It's a wonderful thing that the world is becoming more engaging. But the cost of this is that we have to learn some new manners, some new norms, some new ways of being in the world so that we can get the best of these products without letting them get
Hallelujah,
the best of us.
Hallelujah, because I can't imagine, you know, how many times you walk onto like a subway train and like just people are just involved, you know, so engaged either in their phone or something, and you feel kind of rude kind of moving around. And I do feel like we need to kind of rethink how we interact and engage in society as a whole. So I think about things like healthcare. And it's funny, I had a TMJ, or I do have a TMJ issue, and I actually have an app that reminds me to relax my jaw, and it sounds so stupid and silly, and I kind of laughed when my doctor said, I want you to download this app. It's a very simple app, but it works.
Yeah.
How do you think about how we could get so much more in the healthcare and wellness space when it comes to apps and, you know, whether it's workable technology? How do you see it? How do you see that it should play out or is playing out?
So we were talking about before we went on air about how I get a gadget almost every week. Somebody sends me something to try out because I'm in this health change space.
Yeah.
And healthcare is specifically taking off. I mean, I think one thing I'm super excited about are continuous glucose monitors. Have you seen those around? It used to be something that only diabetics wore, and it's a game changer. I mean, my mother-in-law is a diabetic.
I have a family member who has
one. Yeah, and you start seeing them on people's arms. What you start seeing now is that people who don't have diabetes are now tracking their glucose because it's so easy to do that now you can track it throughout the day. And there's several companies, I work with a few, that will tell you before you eat, right? Before you get a snack,
right,
check your glucose. Why? Because it'll tell you whether you are psychologically hungry or physically hungry. And sometimes it's hard for us to tell the difference. So by looking at this app and saying, actually, my blood glucose is fine, I really don't need a snack, let me wait 15 minutes, that can delay snacking. So that's just one small example, but I think we're going to see an explosion of these new behavior change apps.
All right, so what are some of your favorite, you know, either apps or products that are out there, let's say for working out, because there's so many.
Yeah. So one of the apps I talk about in my book, Hooked, is an app called Fitbod, F-I-T-B-O-D. And I love this app because I actually put out a blog post. I was so frustrated with how bad most fitness apps were. I put out a blog post that the title was, Why Your Fitness App Is Making You Fat. Because they were so bad. All of them were so terrible. And then somebody told me about Fitbod. I downloaded it.
Why were they so bad? Was it just...
Because they didn't form a habit.
Oh, okay.
Right?
Got it.
And so I downloaded Fitbod and I started using it and I said, oh my goodness, this is actually really great. And it looks like it's following the Hook model. The Hook model is what I based my book on and my class at Stanford on. And so I just went to the customer support email thing and I sent them an email. I said, have you by chance read my book? Within 30 seconds, the founder wrote me back and said, yes, we actually built the Hook model into the app and it's changed my life.
That's pretty cool.
I use Fitbod every time I work out. I'm 44 years old, best shape of my life because of this app. It's fantastic.
Well, near cut to the chase here. How can Carol and I make this show more habit forming? That's what we need to know. What do we need?
We have a huge following. We do.
How do we? Yeah. We need them habitually listening. What do we do?
Well, you're doing great so far. So that's fantastic. So the Hook model has.
Here's like have me on every Nier day.
He has another segment coming up. So
let's see. Okay, how do we analyze it?
20 seconds.
Okay,
25 seconds.
Oh, that's so. The most important part, the fuel that we see is the backbone of every habit-forming product is a variable reward, right? Some kind of intermittent reinforcement. And of course, you have it in that you provide the news, the first three letters of news, N-E-W, new. It's all about variability. So that's what makes sports engaging, what makes slot machines so intoxicating, what makes social media fun. It's all about the new, the variability. So you've got that as your backbone.
It's not personality?
Of course
I'm crushed. Maybe he won't come back. No, I'm just kidding.
I thought it was my good looks. I don't know.
We're going to come back with Nier in just a moment. So I want to get back to our guest. We are still talking with Nir Eyal. He is the habits guy, as our Bloomberg's Missy Gafapoulou had written about, but he was a former lecturer at Stanford's Graduate School of Business. He has studied how companies, as we mentioned, like Meta and Twitter, encourage users to spend time on the platforms. Check out his...
Join Bloomberg in San Francisco or virtually on May 7th for The Future Investor, Data-Powered Transformations. This 2024 event series will examine how data is not only playing a pivotal role in investment decisions, but serves as a driving force behind the construction of innovative investable enterprises. This series is proudly sponsored by Invesco QQQ. Register at BloombergLive.com/futureinvestor/radio.
Book 2014, Hooked, How to Build Habit-Forming Products. And he's also got a blog, website, nearandfar.com, and he's still with us in our studio. So we were talking about wellness and health apps, in particular for some of our audience. Peloton, right? Some were addicted. There's something that really rode a high, no pun intended, and then obviously has come undone a bunch. What do you think about that?
Yeah, it's a super interesting story because I think it's a great example of why variability is so important for habit formation. That if something is not variable, if it's predictable, it's boring, right? Think about games, right? Everybody wants to gamify everything, put points and badges and leaderboards. But most games, people burn out on, right? Think about, remember Farmville?
Yes.
Farmville was like the biggest thing ever back in, 2012?
Right.
Who's playing Farmville anymore? Nobody. Why? Because after Farmville, it was Chefville and whatever, Frontierville. It was like the same game again.
You tell me nobody's going to be playing Wordle in a few years?
You may be surprised.
Okay. Yeah.
As long as you know what's great about Wordle is that it's social.
Yeah.
Or as opposed to solitary experiences like Peloton. So Peloton, during the pandemic, when you couldn't go to the gym, you couldn't do the things that you used to do, it was very novel. It's this screen on your bike. It was so interesting, so
connect with people.
But then you do it 3-4 times, and you kind of got the idea, right?
Yeah.
It's the same routines. It's not variable enough, let alone the fact that it's hard work, right? You're really pushing yourself. So it's that I think was what went wrong was that they didn't maintain the sense of variability.
You know, Nir, talk to us a little bit about some of the companies you've invested in over the year and how this notion of habit forming has sort of played into your thesis of whether or not a company's worth investing in. If you could give us some examples of,
sure,
of where, yeah, where it worked well.
Yeah, it's been amazing. So the book came out in 2014, Hooked, How to Build Habit-Forming Products, and it's been used in every conceivable industry. Education is one I'm super proud of whenever I see a company using the Hook model. A few years ago, I got a call from these young entrepreneurs in Norway building this little app. They showed me the Hook model. I was so impressed. I immediately said, please take my money. I want in, because they showed me how they really applied the book. And today that company is Kahoot. It's the most widely used educational software in the world. Last time I checked, they had a multi-billion-dollar valuation. And what are they doing? They're getting kids hooked onto online learning.
So how are they doing that? What are some of the techniques?
Yeah, so they have this really innovative. It's like a you get the, so the Hook model. I'm trying to summarize a 300-page book in 20 seconds, but essentially what they're doing is they're getting kids to invest in making these quizzes on their own to share with their peers.
Right.
And so
right.
That investment phase, this is really special.
That's great.
Yeah, the investment phase is where you put effort into something to make it better.
Right.
So when you are the person making the quiz, right, as opposed to saying that, you know, when we were in school, it was a pop quiz today. That sucks, right?
Yeah,
it's
yeah.
horrible. Here, the kids are making it for their peers.
Right.
And then in the class, they're playing these quizzes. So anybody with kids, you know, under probably 14, I bet you your kids know all about Kahoot.
Yeah.
And that's a wonderful example. You know, we only hear about the bad cases. We only hear about Facebook and
right.
Snapchat melting kids' brains. I think that story is overblown. But we also need to talk about the good examples of how we can actually use habit-forming technology for good.
Well, you know, and here we are, you know, we're not out of the pandemic, because we often say, you know, on the other side of the pandemic, we're not quite there, but it's certainly very different than it was in the, you know, height of it in 2020. But we're trying to figure out, Nir, you know, what trends, what habits that we formed during the pandemic stay with us? Or do you think they just all go away because that was just such a different world?
It's hard to say whether it's better or worse. It's definitely different,
yeah.
right? So the things that changed, we talk a lot in habit formation about internal triggers. Internal triggers are uncomfortable emotional states that we seek to escape. So every product you use for one reason. And that is to feel something different, to modulate your mood, because all human behavior is motivated by a desire to escape discomfort.
Mm.
All human behavior, even the desire to feel good, is psychologically destabilizing. So when we went into the pandemic, and now we have all these internal triggers of fear, uncertainty, doubt, all of these things that are causing us more internal triggers, what changed? Well, people were glued to the news. They were scrolling their devices all day long. They were constantly looking for an escape from this crazy world that we had back then. And so as the world calms down now, or at least, you know, the world never is not
okay.
crazy,
but, you can put, like,
but at least this phase is over. We're looking for other ways to deal with that discomfort, to deal with whatever we're handling in life. Same goes with workplace distractions, right?
Yeah.
So people are not getting distracted at home from their kids or from their pets. Now that they're going back into the office, what we're hearing from employees is that they're getting distracted by their colleagues, by their bosses. So the distractions didn't go away. They just changed.
They just shifted around.
But, you know, Nir, you did sort of flick at the idea of there can be a backlash to products that are too habit forming, whether it be a parent saying, as you said, the social media is melting my kid brain.
Mm-hmm.
So how do you sort of assess that risk when you're trying to decide in a company to invest? You know, is that risk still there for, say, the big social media, for the Robin Hoods? You know, how important is that risk, do you think, to these companies going forward?
It's a great question. I spent a lot of time working on ethics. There's actually a chapter in my book called The Morality of Manipulation, where I talk about all this. But I propose what I call the regret test. And the regret test comes out of my search for how do you make sure that you're ethical when you use these behavioral design techniques? Because as we talked about, they can be used for good. You can help people exercise more and save money and form all these great habits. But how do you make sure you do it ethically? So the regret test says...
You don't do it with DraftKings or one of the gambling apps, I assume.
That's a great example.
Robinhood?
Also potentially a great example. So the regret test says that it asks, would the user do what we have designed for them to do, knowing everything we know? Summarized as, would they regret using our product?
Mm-hmm.
Because people aren't dumb, right? People aren't dumb. That if they regret doing business with you, guess what? Not only are they not going to do business with you, they're going to tell all their friends on social media not to do business with you.
Right.
And so that's why it's so important when we use these behavioral design tactics to do what I insist we do, which is usability testing, which we've been doing for decades to bring people in and see if they regret that experience.
I told you we wish we had like an hour here. 30 seconds left here. Is there some thoughts on the metaverse from your perspective? Like, does that become part of our habits or something that we're going to enjoy going forward?
I think just it's quickly. Way too early to tell. We don't even know what the metaverse is. We don't have even a definition of what it right. is. I think it's kind of like AI. It's like one of these things that captures the imagination yeah. we've been thinking about for so long. Way too early to really start putting down roots, I think.
All right. Going to leave it there. Come back.
Absolutely.
Within your travels, we would love to have you back. Nir Eyal, he's author and investor. Check out his blog, nearandfar.com, joining us here in our Interactive Broker studio.
Collaborate for a greener future at the Bloomberg Green Festival, a groundbreaking celebration of the thinkers, doers, and innovators leading the way. From design and culture to technology, science, and entertainment. Hear from inspirational speakers and immerse yourself in climate solutions, July 10th through 13th in Seattle. Title sponsor, Amazon. Official airline, Alaska Airlines. Get 20% off using promo code RADIO20 at BloombergLive.com/greenfestival.